as if checking to make sure no one was in earshot. They were alone, save for the young sailor on his knees, carefully scrubbing the deck with a stone.
"It's my understanding," he said, his voice low, "that you knew a ship would be intercepting yours. Is that correct?"
Etta gaped at him. No, they hadn't known that. An hour ago. Wait, how long had it been since they were in the museum?
"Grandfather is clearly losing his mind in his advanced years," Sophia said. "To have trusted you."
"Perhaps it was desperation that forced him to appoint you," Nicholas said. "I have been tasked with bringing you to New York, and as far as I am concerned, that is the beginning and end of our business."
He glanced over their shoulders toward the forecastle.
"To avoid unnecessary questions, the other men should see this as nothing more than a regular prize we've captured. Do you take my meaning?"
New York, Etta thought. The two words teased out a tiny bit of hope from the tangled mess of the day.
"What would happen if the truth did slip out, I wonder?" Sophia asked, all sweetness. "What would the crew think of you, risking their lives for a reward they'll never see?"
Something about those words fractured the control over his temper that he'd clearly been wrestling to maintain. Nicholas's arm lashed out, his palm slapping against the wood beside her head. He had loomed over Sophia at his full height, but now he stooped to stare her directly in the eye.
"Disparage me all you like, Miss Ironwood. Spit out every vile curse you can think of at me. But if you threaten my livelihood again, know that there will be consequences."
"Ironwood?" Sophia didn't so much as flinch. She brushed the threat away with a smirk, sickly green face and all. Nicholas shifted back, eyes flickering with a fire that seemed to burn to his core. In the silence that followed, with only the rhythm of the creaking bones of the great ship to mark time, Etta realized what she just witnessed, what the girl had found. A weapon to slice open old wounds. If this was Sophia weak from seasickness, then she was mildly terrified of what the girl would be like at full steam. Torn between letting the conversation continue, perhaps with more useful information, and watching them spar, Etta dug the dull edge of the knife against her thigh again, and breathed in the cold, briny air.
"We understand," Etta said finally. "Thank you."
It had the effect she'd hoped for, drawing Nicholas's attention back toward her. He gave her a curt nod.
"I will have dinner sent to your cabins. Rest well, Miss Spencer."
Etta nodded, keeping her eyes on the toes that peeked out from beneath her dress. Nicholas moved toward the steps, and the air and smoke around them shifted, the skin at the back of her neck prickling with awareness as his eyes combed over her one last time. When the sound of his feet on the stairs disappeared, Etta whirled to face the girl beside her.
"What the hell is going on?"
Sophia sagged against the wall, the back of her hand pressed against her lips. At Etta's words, her face drew up.
"Don't breathe another word until I say so. Otherwise, I will not be responsible for my actions."
Etta pushed the cabin door open again and stepped inside, with her fingers around the warm metal of the knife.
"Tell me who you are," she demanded.
There was a small porthole window in the wall, but the light that filtered in was minimal. Sophia bent on unsteady legs to lift a metal lantern onto a small desk. Etta shifted, trying to get some distance from the smell of vomit and Sophia's cold, assessing gaze. She wanted her back to the door. If this took an ugly turn, she could get herself out and lock Sophia in. The girl sat heavily on the edge of the built-in bunk, drawing a bucket over to herself with her foot.
"Damned ship! Damned traitor! Damned task!"
"Tell me," Etta said.
"How did we get here? And where is here? And who are those people?" "I shouldn't tell you anything after that truly breathtaking display of stup—"
Sophia heaved slightly.
"Stupidity."
"You pushed me," Etta said, letting her words rage on. "You did something to me. You brought me here."
"Of course I pushed you," Sophia sniffled. "You were as slow as a cow. We would have been there for ages, you crying all over yourself like a fool. I did us both a favor."
"Did you—"
She could barely force the words out, Did you shoot Alice? Was she trying to stop you from bringing me here?
Etta's mind was frantically trying to connect why Alice would have been there, not in the auditorium, not with her mother in her office upstairs. She hadn't checked to see if she was carrying her purse. In any other circumstances, she might have believed that someone hiding in the museum had tried to mug her. But it was too much of a coincidence. It was too simple of an explanation.
Alice, Sophia repeated, confused. You mean the old bag. I have no idea who shot her. There were other Ironwood travelers there keeping an eye on our progress. And if it wasn't one of them, well, I wasn't going to stand around and let whoever it was get us too.
Etta stared at her, a thousand thoughts spilling into questions. Sophia laughed at her stunned silence, and the last frayed grip Etta had on her composure finally snapped. She drew the knife up, her chest heaving, body trembling as she pressed it against the other girl's neck. Instinct overrode logic, compassion, patience. The ugliness that poured through her veins was unfamiliar and frightening. What are you doing? Sophia stared up at her, dark eyes widening just a fraction. Then she clucked her tongue impatiently and leaned forward into the blade, until a droplet of blood welled up at the tip. Before Etta could stumble back, Sophia wrapped her hand around hers, pulling it back a fraction of a centimeter from her throat. Her skin would have been the envy of moonlight, it was so pale and smooth. Her dark eyes burned with a wild kind of approval, like Etta had passed an unspoken test. Etta could feel Sophia's pulse flutter, light and warm, as the girl drew her hands toward her own throat again, skimming the exposed flesh.
Here, she said.
Right here. They'll bleed out like a stuck pig before they can squeal, and you'll be able to get away. Remember that. Etta nodded, her throat too tight to speak as Sophia pried the knife out of her fingers and threw it hard enough for the tip to embed itself in the wall and stay there, shivering. They won't expect it from you, she continued. And fool that I am, I didn't either. Good for you. I like a fighter. But it won't do you much good against me.
Says the girl who can't stop throwing up.
Etta barely recognized herself in her anger, and she knew herself even less in her helplessness. It left her feeling the way she'd felt while drowning, watching the surface of the water grow darker by the second. Sophia rose, picked up the silver pitcher from the desk, and poured it into a small porcelain basin, then splashed water on her face, her neck, her hands. When she finished, she gave it a look of ire.
I hate this century. It's so rustic, don't you think?
What century? Etta heard herself whisper.
You really haven't done this before, have you? You truly had no idea.
Remarkable. Sophia glanced up, lips twisting.
Guess.
She didn't want to say it out loud, but it was the only way to know.
18th?
She guessed, thinking of the costumes.
You brought me back to the 18th century?
Desperation raised the pitch of her voice. Tell me. Tell me. Just tell me.
No one brought you anywhere, said Sophia. You traveled.
4. Traveled. Etta rolled the word around in her mind like clay, letting it take shape, smoothing it out, trying it again in different form. Traveled. To travel was to imply some kind of choice, to cross a distance willingly for a reason. Etta had followed that noise, the screams, because she'd wanted to prove herself that she wasn't crazy, that there was a source, a reason for it. And it had led her to the stairwell, the wall of shivering air. Except no, that wasn't the whole truth of it, not really. It had led her to Sophia, and Sophia had brought her to the stairwell because...
You were sent to bring me, Etta said, putting that much together.
You pretended to be a violinist. You got yourself involved with the concert. Sophia gave a little flick of her wrist.
Hand me that damp cloth over there, will you?
Etta picked it out of the basin and threw it at her face, relishing the slap it made as it struck skin. Sophia pushed herself up, her dress spilling out over the side of the narrow bunk.
Well, you're in a mood, aren't you?
Vendetta, fought the urge to scream. Can't imagine why.
The hammering and calls from above poured into the gap of silence. After a while, Sophia spoke.
As amusing as it would be to watch, I can't let you flounder. If you slip and reveal yourself to the others, it'll be my neck waiting for the guillotine, not yours.
As she dragged a flimsy wooden chair over from the door, Etta asked, "What do you mean, exactly, if I slip?" Sophia settled back. She was small enough to stretch her body out in the bunk without bending her knees. She folded the damp towel, draping it over her eyes and forehead.
"It's exactly as I said. If you tell the men on this ship, or anyone else for that matter, that you can travel through time, you damn us both by association."
She lifted the cloth, her eyes narrowing.
"Do you honestly mean to tell me that you know nothing about this? That your parents kept it from you?"
Etta looked down at her hands, studying the red, bruised skin on her knuckles. The questions hung between them like a strand of diamonds, blinding. She looked up, an idea blazing through her disbelief.
"If I answer a question, you have to answer one of mine."
Sophia rolled her eyes.
"If you insist on playing games..."
"I don't know my father," Etta said. "I never have. He was someone my mom met only once, according to her. A fling. Now you tell me, why is that important?"
"I didn't specify your father."
Sophia raised both brows.
"The ability can be inherited from either parent."
"Then... Mom. Oh, God." Etta had to brace herself against the desk to keep upright, her full weight sagging against it as her legs turned to dust under her. "Mom. You can't just pluck her off this path, not without consequences. She's not ready for this. She doesn't have the right training, and there's no guarantee it'll go the right way for her." They hadn't been talking about the debut. Confusion preyed on her thoughts, even as guilt locked her in its jaws. She'd said those things to Alice, those horrible things, because she thought her instructor was trying to hold her back. "She was trying to protect me." Her mom had wanted her to travel, to do this, and Alice hadn't. Was she one of them too, a traveler? Rose had clearly let her in on the secret, even as she left Etta well out of it. How could they have known all of this and never once mentioned it? Why would they put her in this position? "You clearly don't know Etta if you're underestimating her like this. She can handle it."
"Handle what?"
Etta forced her jaw to set, to turn on Sophia with renewed suspicion. If her mother had wanted this to happen, she would have just told her to go with Sophia. The deafening feedback, Alice's death, none of that would have needed to happen. "It's her time." A thought bloomed above the chaos in her mind. Rose and Alice clearly knew she would travel one day, and maybe they'd always debated with each other about trying to stop it somehow, to protect her from this. That could be why they hadn't told her about what she could do. They were arguing about finally cluing her in. Not soon enough, Etta thought, fighting to keep her breath even. Not nearly soon enough. Suddenly she was terrified for her mom, because if one of the time travelers, one of the Ironwoods watching them, had killed Alice without any hesitation in order to get to Etta, and Etta specifically, then who was to say they hadn't done the same to her mother if she, too, had tried to stop them? Why had they come for her? Why did they want her?
"You are clever enough to figure it out, then," Sophia said. "The ability is inherited from one or both parents, usually one now since our numbers have dwindled, and we've been forced to marry outside of our kind. There's a slimmer and slimmer chance of being born with it, but you clearly got it from your mother, Rose Linden."
Linden, not Spencer. But why would she take a different last name? Had she invented it on a whim? Or did it really belong to Etta's father? How did he fit into this, if at all?
"Rather famous in our circles, I must say. She disappeared one day and caused quite the kerfuffle."
Sophia seemed to enjoy watching Etta's world unravel around her. It made Etta's hackles rise that this girl was lording the information over her, clearly hoping that she would beg for it. She wouldn't.
"Aren't you going to ask me another question?"
One corner of Sophia's mouth tilted up as Etta set her shoulders back.
Do you know the name Cyrus Ironwood? Sophia asked finally. Does that mean something to you?
That was two questions, Etta pointed out. And no to both.
How do we travel and how does it work?
Sophia groaned.
Christ, we spend years learning this, and now I have to give you a summary.
Yes, Etta said firmly.
It's a relationship of sorts, a special one that certain people have had with the timeline for thousands of years. There's no machine, if that's what you're thinking. It's more natural than that. Grandfather doesn't like the word, but it's closer to what you think of as magic. Our ancestors had a unique ability to take advantage of tears in the fabric of time, pass through holes to emerge in a different era.
What was the most unbelievable part of that explanation? That the timeline could be torn? Or that she'd use the word magic with a straight face?
They're like the natural crevices, fissures you find around the world. The passages have always existed, and our families have always been able to find them and use them. It's all rather simple, but do try to keep up.
Sophia shifted, trying to get more comfortable.
A passage in medieval Paris could lead to one in, say, Egypt in the time of the pharaohs. You step in as you would to any tunnel, passing back and forth between the entrances.
Etta nodded, trying to rub some feeling back into her freezing limbs, startled from her next question by a rogue thought. Sophia had said, our ancestors. At first, Etta had taken it to mean Sophia's and her grandfather's, the Ironwoods. But were some of those fearless ancestors hers? The Lindens? The thought filled the dark, dusty corner of her heart she'd closed off as a kid, with a scorching, almost unbearable kind of hope. She'd never let herself want more people than the one she already had. It felt too ungrateful for the amount of love her mom and Alice brought into her world. But a family, one with roots and dozens of branches by the sound of it, one of which she'd fallen from.
"There's another gown for you in the trunk in the other cabin," Sophia said, waving her hand. "God knows if you'll fit into that any better than what I squeezed you into."
The insult was shoved aside by the chill of sudden realization.
"Where are my things?" Etta asked.
"Her clothes, her mom's earrings."
"I burned your ugly dress when we came through," Sophia said. "It was ruined anyway. The earrings you were wearing are in a pouch in there somewhere."
The grip of panic eased.
"You swear you didn't throw the earrings away?" "I was tempted," Sophia said. "History wouldn't have missed one ghastly pair of earrings. But the pearls were real. I thought perhaps you might need them one day. To sell."
Etta pulled back in surprise. "To sell?"
"Just go get the damned dress. Undergarments, too. You'll find everything you need wrapped in brown parchment," Sophia said. "And hurry, will you? I have my next question."
Etta stood on stiff legs but stopped beside the door, listening. When she was satisfied no one was lingering nearby, she stepped out, ducking into an identical room. There was so little inside it, not even a desk, that she found the wooden trunk immediately and crouched in front of it. The heavy lid groaned as she heaved it up, and a lovely note of lavender rose with it. There were satchels of it here and there, tucked inside the blanket at the top, even inside the leather shoes she set aside. The brown parcel was tied with rough string, cushioned at the bottom by another layer of blanket. There was little else inside the trunk, a bottle of what smelled like rose water, a brush, and... She released the breath that was burning in her lungs and picked up the small velvet bag. The earrings tumbled out onto her palm, and Etta lost it. The sob bubbled up from deep in her chest, ripping out of her so violently that her whole body shook. She pressed her forehead against her fist, felt the prick of the studs dig into her palm. She shouldn't have left Sophia's cabin. She couldn't keep herself together without the pressure, the need to pretend. She didn't have to be brave now, or calm. There was nothing to prove.
Alice. Oh my God, Alice.
She looked at her hands as if expecting to see the traces of her instructor's blood. They'd killed her to get to Etta. Why hadn't she stopped? Listened to what Alice had tried to say to her in her mother's office. Why had Alice tried to stop any of this? She needed to find a way to keep herself together. Otherwise, she was never going to get out of here. She was never going to find her way back to her own time. Breathe, Doc. Count it out with me. 3 beats in, and 3 beats out. Alice's voice drifted between the fractured pieces of her thoughts. She sucked the damp air deep into her lungs, focused on the way they expanded, and released the air slowly, the way she'd been taught. It had been so long since she'd been in the chokehold of panic and nerves, she'd forgotten how easy it was to slip into their grasp. Close your eyes. Listen only to the music. Listen. She was listening now, to the sounds of men singing above, to the pulse throbbing fast and untamed in her ears. It was instinct to lift her hands the way she did, to mime the shape of a violin out of nothing but air, and play herself back to evenness. She stopped as soon as she knew what she was doing. Etta breathed out heavily through her nose, rubbing a finger along the bridge. Mom wanted me to travel. Not like this, she was sure, but one day. She wanted me to know, to understand what I could do. For the first time in her life, Etta realized she had finally stumbled onto her mother's secret heart, the core of who she was, why she guarded each and every memory of her past, why she could close herself off so suddenly, why she drifted away into deep thought. In spite of everything else, Etta felt something inside her click into place. The icy knot their relationship had twisted into unraveled inside of her. She felt desperate with the need to find her, to make sure she was safe, to talk to her and really know her for the first time. But none of that answered the question of why Rose had kept this a secret in the first place. The only travel she did now was between countries across oceans. Etta felt certain of that. So why'd she disappeared, as Sophia had claimed? And how many of her stories were actually true, not invented to lull a restless little girl to sleep? I need to get back. She'd woken up on this ship to find that all of her carefully conditioned composure had flown away, and what she'd been left with was raw instinct and will. She'd felt wild and unhinged at the time, but she'd proven to herself, if no one else, that she was willing to fight, protect herself. Now she needed to use every ounce of her drive to survive at all costs, to channel her unwillingness to crack under pressure and form a plan to get home. Home. Her time. New York City. Etta stuffed her feet into the tight shoes and slipped the earrings back on, pausing only to make sure they were secure. The slight weight of them would be a reminder of home, her mom, Alice, the debut. Alice. Etta was a time traveler. Could she get back to that moment when she'd fought with her mother and Alice? Could she use her ability to go back in time, leave the concert, and take Alice and her mother away with her? Could she save Alice? Etta had always known the direction her life was heading. She'd fought to stay on that path each and every time she picked up her violin. Her future was the stage, performances, recordings. And yet there had always been a tiny quake in the certainty of that vision. Opening the door even a crack into this was enough of a temptation for her imagination to rip it open and step inside. What would it be like, she wondered, to go wherever, whenever she wanted to? To stand in the heart of a long-dead empire. To cross continents and see the wonders of the world before they disappeared. To sit in the audience in Vienna's Carnator Theater, listening to the debut of Beethoven's 9th Symphony. To beg a lesson from Bach and his years at Leipzig. To save Alice. What choice was there other than to learn as much as she could, so she could get back to that moment in time? She had to put up with Sophia's smirks, with the sickening thought that she might be staring into the face of her instructor's murderer, or someone who'd had a direct hand in it. I can make it, Etta thought, bending to pick up the parcel. I can make it back. And she'd fight every step of the way if she had to. Sophia was sitting on the edge of the bed when Etta stepped back inside. Did you get lost? She snapped, leaning her face over the bucket again. After the taste of fresh air, the smell of bile and vomit was enough to turn at his own stomach. How is it exactly that you are perfectly fine and I... Etta turned away as Sophia heaved. She unwrapped the parcel, sliding the strings off, until she was left with a pile of linen, cotton, and silk, and something that looked suspiciously like a corset. What do I do with all of this? Take off your soiled gown and see for yourself, Sophia snipped. Start with the shift. The flimsy thing that looks like a nightgown.
Next, the stockings, which you'll need to secure with garters. And yes, you must wear them.
Someone had cut the front of her gown and the corset-like garment beneath it after pulling her out of the water. It was split nearly all the way down to where it met the dress's skirt. It should have been easy enough to pull off, but the wet strings of the corset had become tangled and knotted when she'd pulled Nicholas's jacket over her for cover. Once she had them loosened, it was easy enough to pull the pieces apart, drop them to the ground, and wiggle out of the remains of the sodden, blood-stained skirt.
"You can do this." Her mom's words floated through her mind. "Etta can handle this." She could. She would.
"What question did you decide on?" Etta asked, reaching behind her. The underskirts were the main thing dragging her down. There were two layers of wool tied together, separate from the dress. They slid down her legs, smacking against the ground. She braced one hand against the coarse wooden paneling on the wall and stepped out of them and the stockings. She was left standing in what looked like a long, thin cotton nightgown, with nothing else beneath it. Her face burned as she glanced over at Sophia.
"Change your shift and bring me the other stays. I'll lace you up again," Sophia said. "And again, yes, you need it. 21st-century girls have no waist to speak of, apparently. The gown won't fit correctly otherwise."
Etta scowled. "Yes, Your Majesty."
"I rather like the sound of that. Thank you," Sophia said. "No waist, but able to recognize her social betters. Perhaps I can work with you after all."
Etta rolled her eyes. For whatever modesty it would give her, she turned her back on Sophia and tugged the shift over her head, replacing it with the clean, dry one. She threaded her arms through the sleeves, smoothing the fabric down when it caught and twisted at her knees. Sophia stumbled ungracefully in the direction of her trunk. Etta caught a brief glimpse of more fabric before the other girl found what she was looking for, a long, thin needle carved from bone.
"Slide your arms through the straps of the stays," Sophia said. "These lace in the front, so you can do them yourself from now on."
"Great," Etta muttered. "Can't wait."
"Part of playing the part, of not being suspected, is dressing it," Sophia reminded her.
The needle, it turned out, was used for the stays laces. Etta could smell the leather as Sophia worked the needle through eyelets on either side of the opening. The fabric was stiff, and the boning bit into her skin as Sophia pulled, and tightened again. Etta's posture changed, straightening, until she was sure she was at least 3 inches taller.
"Leave the laces in when you undress, only loosen them," she said, "and slide it off. You'll want to dress quickly on the ship of men."
"Okay," Etta gasped out, tugging at the strings to loosen them. Sophia batted her hand away.
"You've ruined the nicer of the three gowns I bought you," she said. "But I suppose it hardly matters, seeing as we won't be dining with the crew. Both of these are in the robe à l'anglaise fashion."
"Translation?" Etta slipped another wool underskirt up to her hips and almost fainted at the sudden sweet warmth of it.
"The bodices are closed, see? You won't need a stomacher to cover the stays."
Sophia pressed the gown against her chest.
"You forgot the stockings and garters. They're easier to do without the bulk of petticoats."
Etta blew out a sigh as she picked up the silky strips of fabric, bent to pull one up over her right leg, secured it with a ribbon just above the knee, and started on the left side. Sophia knew a considerable amount about this, but she clearly wasn't from the rustic 18th century.
"How old are you exactly?" Sophia asked, turning to the bed again. "That's my next question."
17, Etta said, pulling the gown over her head.
"How old are you?"
17, Sophia said.
"And a half."
"Of course." Etta fought the pathetic urge to point out that she still had her beat. She was only a few months shy of turning 18.
"Are you really good enough to play the violin professionally?"
Etta's fingers slipped against the ribbon that she was attempting to knot tightly enough to keep the stockings up, but loosely enough to keep blood flowing to her leg. She didn't have to give her the whole truth.
"I think so." "And your father? Your future husband?"
A swell of a wave passing under them sent Sophia falling back onto the bed. Once she was down, she stayed there.
"Your future husband," Sophia ground out, her face squeezed tight against another burst of nausea. They would allow you to work, even after you had children.
Odd question.
Well, as I said, I don't know who my father is, Etta said. But no one can or will tell me what to do with my life once I turn 18. At least they can't force a decision on me.
Sophia watched her, eyes glassy.
Is that true?
Etta knew what her next question should have been, but another one pressed itself onto her tongue.
What century are you from? I have two questions this round, by the way.
I'm from every century, Sophia said with a dismissive wave. My natural time, the year I was born, was 1910, Philadelphia. I haven't been back then since forever.
Where is the other opening of the passage located? The one that leads to the Met?
Sophia burst out laughing.
As if I would ever tell you. As if it would actually matter if I did. Do you even know what ocean we're on?
She seemed to realize her mistake a second later.
That wasn't a question.
Yes, it was, and yes, I do. It's the Atlantic, isn't it?
Etta didn't need Sophia to respond to know she was right.
Is it?
She paused, trying to think of the right question.
How did we get on this ship?
We came through the passage. You were unconscious. I changed you into era-appropriate clothing, and we both traveled to the docks to board this ship. It was the only one leaving out of that particular port that could make Grandfather's requested arrival time. The issue was, this vessel was bound for England, so he hired that rat to capture it and bring it into port in New York, where he's waiting for us.
Those were far more answers than Etta ever could have hoped for. Sophia must have been getting tired to let so much slip.
Can you wet this rag for me?
The other girl threw it. Etta caught it between two fingers, holding it out in front of her.
Sure, she said.
And that was a question, by the way.
Sophia narrowed her eyes.
Damn you!
Why was I brought here? Etta interrupted. Why did you have to come get me?
Those are two different questions with two different answers, Sophia said. To the former, I don't know. I'm not allowed to ask such things. To the latter, because I was told to.
By who?
That's three, and a stupid one, seeing as I've already told you.
Etta swore. She had.
Grandfather.
Disgust coiled in her. The question was small, quiet when it finally emerged from Sophia's pale lips.
When do women get the right to vote?
Etta blinked, surprised again. Of all the things she could have asked. You have passages to different eras, right? Do you seriously not know?
If you must know, before I was sent to fetch you, I hadn't been granted the privilege of traveling past a certain year, Sophia said irritably. Answer the question, then. Tell me if it's true. If what the moving picture box said was right about a woman running for president.
Moving picture box? The television? This was getting more and more interesting. Sophia was a lot more curious than she'd originally given her credit for. She wasn't digging into Etta's past to find something to use against her. No. She'd wasted a question on this because she wanted to know the answer that badly.
Yes. One's running. And with voting, maybe 1920?
1920, Sophia repeated. 10 years.
10 years from what? Her birth year? Etta couldn't believe the explanation she'd given. That Sophia hadn't been given the privilege of traveling past a certain year. How could they stop her, when all the travelers had the whole of history at their fingertips? That thought sparked another one.
Can a traveler change history? She asked.
It's my turn, Sophia groused. But yes, travelers have been known to accidentally make small changes with their own oversight and stupidity. It's quite easy to do if you're not careful. In most cases, it doesn't cause a big enough change to merit fixing. But changing something intentionally is against our rules, and can result in years of being banned from traveling. Or worse.
I don't see how a small change couldn't turn into a big one, Etta pointed out.
Sometimes it does, but sometimes nothing happens at all. It can be difficult to predict.
Sophia crossed her arms over her chest, closing her eyes.
The best way to explain this is to think of the timeline as a kind of constant roaring stream. Its path is set, but we create ripples by jumping in and out. Time corrects itself the best it can to keep later events consistent. But if a small change snowballs into a much bigger one, or if a traveler's actions are devastating enough, it can actually shift the flow of the timeline, thereby changing the shape of the future from that point on. Etta leaned toward her.
What do you mean, the shape of the future?
What is education like in your time? Sophia countered. The moving picture box in my hotel made me believe it's common to attend with men.
The television, Sophia corrected, and gave a very impatient rundown of the educational system in America.
All right, it's like this, Sophia said. Big alterations, most of the time, take throwing an ungodly amount of money around and befriending the right, powerful people. Grandfather has done it a few times, of course, to secure our fortune and bring the other families in line.
What? Etta thundered.
Her timeline wasn't the true timeline. Her future was the one the old man had decided on. It's either a coordinated effort by multiple travelers, or the incredible luck of finding a linchpin moment in the timeline. Things like wars are harder, since they have so many moving pieces, and it's like trying to hold back a tidal wave. But it is possible. It's far easier to change a city's skyline, create or ruin a company, back and fund laws that suit our business interests. Grandfather might have caused a few stock market crashes to ruin the fortunes of the other families, for instance, and those might have spiraled into something more, historic.
Historic? What qualified as historic? The Great Depression?
Again, it's not in practice anymore, Sophia continued. We protect our timeline.
Your fortune and power, you mean, Etta thought. She was right. This family was ruthless, and she'd never been so grateful not to share blood with anyone in her life.
What happens if the future is changed? Etta leaned forward, resting her elbows on her knees. Sophia sighed. Tell me about travel in your era. What is it like to be on an airplane?
Biting back her impatience, Etta told her, then waited for her answer, shifting uncomfortably on the hard seat.
Etta folded her hands over her stomach as she stared up at the ceiling. If someone did alter the past, and the consequences were large enough to shift the timeline, it would not erase you, a traveler outside of your natural era, from existence. You would go on, alive. It would, however, erase the world you know. You could return and find the circumstances of your life altered in such an enormous way, it would look unrecognizable to you. You wouldn't know the same people, live in the same house, and so on. You would be a refugee from your original, natural time. The moment the timeline shifts to a new one, what we call a wrinkle is created. Time will attempt to correct and realign itself the best it can by dragging you, the traveler, out of whatever era you're in and shoving you into the last common year between the old timeline and the new. It made some sense to her that she wouldn't be erased from history by making a mistake. Erasing herself would also erase the initial mistake that caused it, making it impossible to have altered anything in the first place. But what Sophia was describing was terrifying. She could be returned to a time in which no one, not Alice, not Pierce, no one, would know her. It would void everything she'd accomplished with the violin, the name she'd worked so hard to establish. "You're considering this, aren't you?" Sophia asked. "I can see it in your face. Before you were afraid. Now you're curious."
"It doesn't matter if I'm curious," Etta said. "I'm going home."
"You won't be going back until Grandfather allows it, and if he's demanding your presence, he must have a good reason for it. I'd like to know what it is."
Etta forced her shoulders to relax. You and me both.
Unlace me, said Sophia. I'd like to rest now.
But this game isn't over. And her last question. Etta had spent so much of her life sorting through critiques and assessments of her playing, she felt fairly confident in her ability to pick out the truth from an exaggeration, a preference, or a lie. What Sophia said had been the truth, but not the whole truth.
So now you won't return the favor, Sophia huffed. I knew I should have brought a maid.
Etta pushed herself up as the ship began to rock. Sophia turned green again as Etta's nimble fingers worked down the row of tiny buttons.
The fabric, some kind of damask, was warm and damp from the girl's sweat. The stays were heavy with it, the shift beneath translucent and reeking sourly. In spite of everything, an aching kind of sympathy made Etta turn and retrieve a fresh one from the nearby trunk. In the instant before she looked away, Etta saw the deep, angry grooves the corset had left behind in the girl's skin. Sophia let out a small sigh of relief as she slipped into the fresh undergarment. If they were in agreement over one thing, it was the not-so-insignificant fact that this wasn't a stellar era for women. "How are we supposed to move in these?" Etta said, tossing the stays onto the desk.
"They don't expect women to do much of anything," Sophia said. "Well," she added, "at least not women of any station. I'm sure the peasants of this era are glad for some support when they're hunched over, cleaning their homes, or doing whatever it is peasants do. Makes running and fighting bloody hard, though."
Etta rubbed her forehead, not sure where to start with that.
"For now, your role here is wallpaper," Sophia said. "Decoration, until we get to New York, and then it'll be whatever grandfather asks of you."
Etta recoiled at the thought. If her mom had been there, the mere idea would have sent her on a tirade that blistered ears and scorched hearts across the entire ocean. Wallpaper. Decoration. Her whole life and person whittled down to nothing.
"I don't accept that," Etta said. "I'm neither of those things, and for the record, neither are you."
At that, Sophia's expression changed, and the softness of exhaustion was pulled back by keen interest.
"You've been spoiled, you know. You and your voting, your schooling, your independence. It's been wasted on you."
Etta bristled, as Sophia clearly wanted. Like any girl, she still felt the echoes from earlier eras of repression. She'd been raised by a mother who'd fought hard to get a wage she deserved, to have access to education when she lacked every advantage, to travel on her own terms. The idea that she was being asked, that she was being expected to simply play along, made the blood throb in her veins. She was already in the damn stays. Wasn't that enough?
"Why stay here if you can go anywhere in time?" Etta asked. "You can come back with me. I mean, travel forward again. Or go into the past and try to alter the laws."
Sophia let out a single, flat laugh.
"I've no choice. This is the year all travelers are forced to travel from, where our family is currently based. Grandfather chooses, and we follow. Regardless of where and when we're born, we all meet there. We all offer our services to the head of the family. We play the roles each era demands of us, and we do not meddle with laws or society. At least not anymore."
Wasn't that convenient, thinking that this was some kind of role, that they were playing parts, like this was all one great big play and they'd been cast as the leads? It was an easy way to wash their hands of responsibility for fixing things, to sit back as wars were waged and people were oppressed. Etta was protective of her future, the life she'd known. But the idea of doing nothing when there was the power to act made her uncomfortable, and more than that, angry.
"What's the purpose of traveling, then?" Etta demanded, impatient with all of these non-answers. "If you won't try to fix anything, make the world a better place, why bother traveling?"
"To serve Grandfather's will," Sophia said, sounding tired by it all.
"Protect the family's interests. To tour what an era has to offer and enjoy it."
Wonderful. They had the rarest, most bewildering power in the world. And how did her family choose to use this incredible gift? To line their pockets with cash and go sightseeing.
"That's it?" Etta spluttered.
"Seriously?"
"We protect our timeline. We defend it from attacks by enemies of our family. Remnants of the other three traveling families that refuse to be absorbed into our own."
"You do have a choice, you know," Etta told her after a moment. "There is always a choice. You know where the passage is to my time. You could choose to leave, but you don't. So what's really keeping you here, other than loyalty and fear?"
"Are you calling me a coward?" Sophia asked, her words chipped from ice.
The other girl had this power, too. So what was keeping her in check, Etta wondered, when clearly she wanted so much more than what her family was offering?
"I'm saying you're smart. You want something better. So take back the control of your life and go."
"And you can take me back with you."
Atta wove her hands together again in her lap, watching for the shift in the other girl's expression. It wasn't exactly manipulation, per se, but an offer to ally herself. If she could convince Sophia she did deserve better than what the past had to offer, then the girl might bring her back to the passage they'd come through. Together, they could figure out how to get off this ship. Etta was almost positive, with some creative lying on both their parts, that her mom would be willing to help the girl get back on her feet. Sophia shut her eyes and shook her head. When she opened them again, Etta felt scorched by the fury in them.
"Save your breath," Sophia hissed. "Our life entails order. It requires rules, and the act of blending in to ensure our survival. You don't understand, Etta. There are less than 100 travelers alive now. We are already dying out, without the risk of being captured or killed in an unforgiving era. We all observe the norms of the era, no matter how it might affect us."
"Tell yourself that, if it makes you feel better about it," Etta said. Sophia rolled her eyes.
"Could you imagine what kind of abuse we'd suffer if the right people found a way to force us into their service?"
Etta didn't have to imagine anything. She saw the flicker of horror on the girl's face.
"We protect ourselves by playing roles fit for the year we're in."
"What do you mean?" Etta asked.
"I mean exactly that. The future you know. Before Grandfather united the families, they were constantly trying to destroy each other's natural timelines. There was no stability. Now there is. So cling to your rights, your beliefs, your future. But know that none of them will help you here. You haven't been forced to survive in the same way as the centuries of women who came before you. You know nothing of the impossibly small weapons we must use to carve out knowledge and power."
The many scattered scrapes and pages of Sophia's life began to assemble themselves in Etta's mind. She felt them drawing together, saw the rigidity of the spine that held together someone seething, boiling with so much spite and cunning. Sophia's own small weapon was finding other people's vulnerabilities, chipping away at their fears and desires until they were exposed like raw nerves. What kind of life had her family given Sophia to make her so desperate for more, to force her to sharpen this skill? Sophia's voice was growing rougher the longer she spoke.
"Now that our game is at an end, allow me to be perfectly clear. Society is always the same, regardless of the era. There are rules and standards, with seemingly no purpose. It's a hateful, elaborate charade, equal parts flirtation and perceived naivete. To men we have the minds of children, and so you will not make eye contact with any man on this ship. You will eat slowly, carefully, and little, and if not with me in my cabin, then alone. You will not leave your cabin unless I am there to accompany you, and you will do us both the favor and act the part of a mute, unless you have been asked a direct question and I am not there to answer it. And you will not, under any conditions, speak or associate with Carter, beyond his capacity as our servant."
Anger whipped fast and hot against her pulse. She was tired of Sophia acting as if every other living soul was beneath her.
"Nicholas isn't our servant."
Sophia pushed herself up onto her elbows and repeated,
"Nicholas?"
Etta realized her mistake a moment too late. Even she knew that in this time, it wasn't proper to address anyone you weren't close to or related to by their given name, least of all a person of the opposite sex.
"Mr. Carter," she corrected herself. "You know what I mean. Don't you dare treat him like..." "Watch yourself," Sophia cut in. "I know what you're thinking, the conclusion you must have drawn, but know this. My mistrust is of a very personal nature. I have seen the rotten edges of his soul, and I know him for the deceitful swine he is."
There was no mockery, nothing false in her voice.
"Stay away from him."
Etta rose, gathering up her wet clothing to hide the way her hands shook. "I'm not wrong. I'm not." She'd bet on the person who had jumped into the ocean to save her, not the one who'd trapped her in the past against her will. Any day, any century.
"Unlike you," she said when she reached the door. "I'll make my own decisions."
But as Etta gave in to the urge to look back over her shoulder, to see if her words had landed the way she'd hoped, Sophia was already on her back again, eyes closed.
"Go on," Sophia said as the door creaked open. "Try."
Etta stepped into the hallway, shutting the door. She leaned back against it, searching for the rhythm of the repairs happening on the deck above her, the voices drifting up from beneath her feet. A song of work, one that spoke of labor and skill. The notes floated through her ears, arranging themselves to match the tempo and drive. "Stop it," she thought, fingers tightening on the fabric in her arms. A breeze escaped through the open hatch and brushed by her on its way toward the forecastle at the other end of the ship. The curtains were gone now, and she could make out hammocks, plus a small area where a few men sat scraping food off metal plates. One turned, and the whole left side of his face was covered with a blood-soaked bandage. She turned back to the other cabin door, ready to be alone. Who's the coward now? She draped the damp gown and underpinnings over her own built-in bunk to finish drying. She brushed at the thin crust of white salt clinging to the stiffening fabric, before turning her attention to Nicholas's jacket. Mr. Carter's jacket. Something in her snapped. Why was she staying here? Because Sophia had ordered her to? She could go up on deck if she liked. She could escape the smell of sickness, the cramped confines of the cabin, take in the fresh sea air and look into the distance. She'd make her own choices in all of this, no matter what Sophia said. Only, Etta deflated the moment her fingers brushed the handle. He had asked them to stay below while the ship was repaired, and to stay out of the forecastle. It didn't matter that the request must be partially powered by his desire to keep Sophia away from him. While she wouldn't take orders from the other girl, Etta couldn't bring herself to ignore Nicholas's wishes. Plus, the deck had been littered not only with bodies but weapons and shards of metal and glass. Until they cleared it completely, it wasn't safe, and she wasn't about to get in the way of their work. How do I do this without her? Think, think, think. Etta breathed in the calming scent of soap and cedar as she sat on the edge of her bunk, and realized with surprise that she was still clutching the jacket. Her hands were still wrapped in its warmth, at odds with the toes freezing in her shoes. With as delicate a touch as she could manage, she polished the line of brass buttons that ran down the front and draped the large expanse of the jacket over her legs to smooth out the creases she'd left in the fabric. Her fingers brushed a small line of raised stitching where someone had mended a tear just below the shoulder. She wondered what had made it. An accident? Carelessness? A weapon? Ask him. The words rose again and again until she couldn't ignore them. Ask him for help. They had a common enemy. Maybe he wouldn't be so willing to do Sophia's bidding when it came down to it. Nicholas, Mr. Carter, disliked Sophia. But would that be enough to compel him to put her back? Where? She still didn't know the location of the passage she'd come through to get here. But she sat up straighter, the idea racing from her head to her heart. The crew in the hold, they would know where they'd sailed from, wouldn't they? Everyone on the ship was bound to know where she and Sophia had boarded from. I've seen the rotten edges of his soul. I know him for the deceitful swine he is. Etta shook her head. The crew members were the key, both the ones working above and the ones below. If they got to know her, knew that she'd essentially been kidnapped, would they help her get away from Sophia? Would they be willing to bring her back? She could figure out a way to play the perfect 18th-century girl, on her own terms. It would just be a matter of getting the crew to like her. Which, given her track record of friends, might actually be the most difficult part of this. She had acquaintances on the competition circuit, but she knew more about their technical skill as violinists than about their personal lives. And then there had been Pierce. Etta's throat felt thick as something lodged in the base of it. The familiar sting of tears, the pressure behind her eyes. Thinking of Pierce now only made her think of Alice. I'm going to save her. Her death wasn't a conclusion. It wasn't the end. Etta blanked the thoughts out of her mind by sheer force of will and stood, setting the jacket beside the gown. Her hands itched with the need to be busy, to play the violin until her head emptied and she sank into music. Instead, she dug through the layers of blankets in the trunk, feeling for the silver hairbrush she'd seen somewhere at the bottom. The bristles felt like they were made of some other, stiffer kind of hair. She examined the fine detailing of leaves and flowers on the silver back, surprised that Sophia had included something so beautiful and nice for her to use.
Not, say, a small rake that would tear out her hair by the roots. By the time she'd worked one stroke through the nest of knots, Etta wasn't so sure a rake would have been less painful. She worked with agonizing care, biting her lip to keep from crying. The hairspray she'd shellacked on before the concert hadn't been washed out by the sea salt, but it only hardened. It might have struck her as sort of impressive if her scalp hadn't been on fire, and what hair she could work through the brush hadn't been standing straight out like a stretched cotton ball. Both the pitcher and the basin in this cabin were empty, and Etta was too proud to steal some water, even if Sophia was asleep. There was a faint scratch and knock at the door. She held her breath and stayed quiet, hoping whoever it was would assume she was asleep. Instead, after another knock, the door cracked open, and a small face peered inside. A young boy, the one she'd seen on his hands and knees scrubbing the deck, kept his face turned down, his hands folded in front of him.
"Oh, I hate to trouble you, but..."
His face was an explosion of freckles against pale pink skin, topped off by gorgeous red hair that seemed wasted on a boy. His eyes were a bright, clear blue, and as he looked up, they popped out wide. Etta had the sudden painful realization that, while her hands had stopped working and returned to her lap, the brush had not made the journey with them. It dangled from the side of her head.
"Miss," he gasped, "you didn't... Terribly sorry, I only... I just need the captain's... That is, Mr. Carter's jacket."
With as much dignity as she could muster, Etta pointed to the bunk. "It's just over there. Tell him I'm sorry I kept it so long." The whole time she'd been using it as a security blanket, it hadn't even occurred to her that he might not have another one. Idiot. She was embarrassed by her own rudeness. The boys scampered and plucked the jacket up, all scrawny limbs and big ears. She turned back to her work, trying to disentangle the brush without ripping out any more of her hair. The creak of the door hinges never came.
"Don't you have any pomatum, miss?" he blurted out. "Looks painful the way 'tis."
Then, going white in the face with fear, added,
"Apologies."
"No, it's all right," Etta said, thinking quickly.
"I don't have any pomatum or water.
Could you possibly get them for me?" Nicholas had said to use the boys if they needed anything. Etta wasn't sure what the expected behavior was here, but the boy didn't seem troubled or even wary of the request. In fact, he bounced into action.
"'S all right, miss. I'll be back. I'll give the jacket to another boy to brush and bring some fresh water for you. Me mum taught me how to do her hair right and proper, like a lady."
He caught himself on the next breath, steadying himself so he stood straight, thin shoulders back. Looking at him now, Etta guessed he couldn't be more than 12, maybe 13.
"If you be needing the help, miss."
She did need help, all right. Both the kind he was offering and the kind she had just realized he could provide. Sophia had warned her not to be too familiar with anyone on the ship, anyone in this era, really. But now she had a justified excuse for keeping him around, wringing what information she needed out of him. Etta pressed her lips together to keep from smiling, hiding the excitement rippling through her. "I'm Etta Spencer. What's your name?"
"Jack, Miss Spencer."
He gave a little bow. True to his word, he did return, with a pitcher of warm water, a rag, and a canister of something that smelled wonderfully spicy and sent a cramp of hunger through her empty stomach. Jack was serious about his business. When Etta tried to help him rinse and towel her hair off, he gave her a stern look. She bit her lip to keep from smiling and let him go about his work stoically, applying the spicy mixture, the pomatum, she guessed. A few minutes into being groomed like a delicate lapdog, Etta put her plan into play. "Jack, are you a member of the prize crew, or one of the Arden's boys?" He puffed out his chest as he announced,
"Prize crew, miss, and one of the best at that. Captain Orr keeps us all trained right and proper."
Perfect. Exactly what she'd hoped for. "Could you tell me about the men?" Jack pulled back, giving her an incredulous look.
"Well, they drool and snore and fart like any other man, I promise you."
She bit her lip to keep from laughing. "No, I mean, how about their names? Where they come from? What they do when they're not working? I've always been so curious about that." Always, as in the last 10 minutes.
Still, Jack hesitated, brow creased, as if we were puzzling out the propriety of it all. Etta brushed aside the guilt and gave the boy the